This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
We return triumphant. We are the Decibel Geek Podcast. Oh man, fresh off our interview with Ace Frehley, feeling pretty good, but got to get back to basics. We've been 2 weeks without knowing what's going on in the world around us. Well, that all changes right now as the Decibel Geek Podcast presents GeekWire, your weekly, well, bi-weekly dose of rock and roll news. The good, the bad, the ugly, the stupid. We're going to cover it all right here today. My name is Aaron Camaro, and the man with his finger on the pulse of the world of rock and roll, my awesome co-host, Chris Sinzak. My brother, are you bringing the news?
Yeah, we've got all of the above of those things that you listed, and we're going to get right to them now. This broke a couple days ago before we recorded this. Skid Row has parted ways with singer Eric Grunwald, and basically what had happened was Eric, if you don't know, suffered from cancer right before he got into the band.
Yeah.
And soldiered through doing the tour, did great on the album, but he's kind of come to the realization, I might die if I keep doing the road gigs with Skid Row, and also doing the, you know, he has to travel back to Europe to do his treatments at times. So it makes total sense that he needs to leave the band. So, and everyone wanted to jump on the whole, oh God, maybe it wasn't just Bach, maybe it's the other guys. And like, I've heard that argument before, and with ZP, the guy they had before Eric, I think you could look into that. But in this case, I don't blame Snake or Rachel. I think it's just purely a medical thing. But of course, we all know what that's starting the chance of.
Could it finally happen?
No.
No, probably not. Probably not. This is a bummer, man. But everybody involved knew this was a possibility from the very beginning. It sucks for everybody, you know, and Eric's got to take care of himself. I can dig that, you know. Everybody knows his history with his illness, and, you know, we want to see this guy live a long, happy life, so you got to do what you got to do. But, man, it sure sucks for Skid Row. You know, they just came out with that album not that long ago. Everybody pretty much liked it, thought it was really good. Eric Grunwald was a great fit for the band. He's got that Sebastian Bach 20 years ago kind of vibe to his vocals, and it sounded pretty damn good. But now here they are again without a lead vocalist.
Yeah, and I don't know what they do from here because it's going to be a tough pill to swallow if somebody else other than Bach comes in, because I know everybody's just kind of like over them having the musical chairs of vocalists. But
yeah.
I don't know. And they have four dates left to fulfill that were on the current tour, and Lizzie Hale's going to fill in and do vocals for them. So I know that's not a permanent solution, but it'll be interesting to see some video of these four shows.
Yeah, man. I'd be excited if one of those shows happened to be here.
That's not.
I'd go to it, man. I'd go to it. I'd check it out. That sounds pretty cool. And you know, Lizzie Hale is a huge Skid Row fan. I think she did a cover of Slave to the Grind on one of her albums, one of the Hailstorm cover albums. And that's pretty cool, man. It'd be a cool thing to see. But what the hell is Skid Row going to do now?
Well, Bach already came out and, you know, made his case saying, you know, we should do it for the fans and everything. But those guys have pretty much made it clear they will turn down untold amounts of money to not have to work with him.
But I think if there's ever a time for it to happen, they got to be looking at it like now, because it's like you said, you know, they've had so many different lead singers over the years now that every time they get a different guy, it's like when Eric Grunwald joined the band, I hoped that this would be the beginning of an era
right,
for Skid Row, you know, something that would carry on for many years, many more albums, and they could build a name off of what they're doing now, because they won't do again what they did back then when they had their greatest success. So, I mean, at this point, might want to just bite the bullet.
Don't get me wrong. If I'm in their shoes, I'd probably just bite the bullet, travel separately, show up, see each other on stage, and just make your money. But I still have to question how much money there really is in them doing a reunion tour. I think that window closed a long time ago. I don't know that they play that many bigger places with Bach. I think it would be a step up in sales, but is it enough to offset having to put up with a overgrown 6-year-old?
Yeah, they're probably playing the same venues, same shows with larger audience, you know, more ticket sales.
Yeah. Probably would make good money at least. Do it for a couple years, a year.
Think about the hardcore Skid Row fans from back in the day that just never kept up with Skid Row the way we have. You know, I was there buying the albums during the Johnny Solinger years.
Right.
I wanted to hear the stuff with ZP Thert, and we never got that. And then bought the new one as soon as it came out, the latest one.
Don't forget the Tony Harnell era.
Oh, yeah.
6 months, I think.
A lot of those original fans have probably dropped off at the point where around Subhuman Race time. Mm-hmm. But if those fans got word that Sebastian Bach was back with Skid Row, I think that would pull them out to go see it.
Yeah, I think the business would be in the live shows. I think they could definitely get a lot of media attention, I think.
You know, and a lot of albums nowadays are recorded separately via technology. You know, sure. They could even record new music where the band comes together, writes all the songs, just like in the old days, kicks them on over to Bach in his studio in Canada or wherever he's at, and he can lay the vocals on it. They could come out with new albums without ever having to see each other.
Do the album that way and then go out and do the tour and then like have like custom partitions made. That where they go up on the stage where you don't even have to see Bach the entire time. You just stay in your, like, or like Spinal Tap, like the glass box or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a pod thing or something. It's easier now than ever to work with somebody and never see them.
Yeah, it's true. You know, just, you got to lay that barrier down. But yeah, I don't know. But I am excited about the new Sebastian Bach album.
Yeah, I've liked what I've heard off of it so far.
So you got that coming. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Skid Row.
Some Accept news. In an interview with Appetite for Distortion, Accept guitarist Wolf Hoffman weighed in on the debate about people using AI as a tool to create melodies, harmonies, and rhymes based on artificial intelligence algorithms and machine learning. And he said, well, the potential's good. The potential good is that, yeah, you can create sometimes. Like, for instance, I tried it for lyrical ideas, and it's scary good, to be honest. You can just say, hey, write me a song lyric or something, and it spits out some pretty amazing stuff.
Wow.
But, of course, you have to say, is this really what I wanted to say? Is it me? Well, then how would I really say it? So you still have to tweak it and stuff, and we ended up never using any of it. But for songwriting and demoing stuff, I was intrigued. I found it intriguing. Gives you a bunch of ideas you hadn't thought about. And, of course, I've seen some images that were done with AI and thought, whoa. A designer or a human would have spent a lot of hours creating that thing, but it spits it out like that. Little surprised by this, but I guess it would be good to maybe get some inspiration for lyrics, but sure. Be careful if you're using AI for anything because it's pulling from existing content.
Yeah.
The whole basis of AI is copyright infringement, really.
Yeah, pretty much, if you think about it, because it's always pulling the information from somewhere else.
Yeah, it's pulling from documented history, and it's great in a lot of ways, and I've seen some amazing stuff with it. But on the creative side, with especially with music and stuff, I don't know. Although, and I will recommend I don't recommend stuff much, but there's a YouTuber named Stevie T. He's a Canadian guy, and he's an amazing guitar player, but he is very annoying. I'll go ahead and warn you. If you get into his brand of humor, he's one of the funniest on YouTube. But he did a video specifically on asking AI to teach guitar. Like, you know, what is the tab for Stairway to Heaven? What is the guitar tab for, you know, for this song or that song? And it got things wrong almost 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So it's like, don't expect AI to teach you anything on guitar.
Wow.
It's a funny video, though.
But I suppose in time, it'll be able to do it easily.
I mean, it is still in its infancy, so
right.
it'll probably get better.
If you're calling on AI to answer a question like that, you're probably the first one or one of the first ones to ever ask it. Mm-hmm. So then in that way, you're not going to get a legit answer. You're going to get the best that it can do based on what it knows. But then going forward, if more people ask for that same thing, it's going to start to learn it. And then eventually someday, I don't know, I don't even want to think about it.
Well, as of now, it doesn't even get Mary Had a Little Lamb correct.
Wow, yeah. But, you know, to use it as a tool to give you some ideas, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, that's what it's supposed to be as a tool. But for an artist, I don't know. I just don't see any of the bands that I like in the musical styles that I prefer using that too much. Now, pop music and stuff like that, I'm sure in time it's all going to be written by AI, but I don't care about that. I care about the artistic dudes that want to write good songs that come from them because they're the creators of it, right, and wouldn't use AI to kind of cheat and help you write songs because you don't need to, and the artist in you wouldn't allow it anyway.
Yeah, I agree. Singer Chad Gray was asking an interview about the first record he ever got into when he was discovering music, and his answer was Motley Crue, Too Fast for Love, and also Shout at the Devil was like kind of the game changers for him.
Yeah,
so I just want to kind of give a little basis for how far back he goes as a fan, and he says that Motley Crue should, quote, just bow out at this point, and says it's, quote, hard for me to watch.
Wow.
Which, of course, everyone listening is going, no shit.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear a known musician go on the record with that.
Right, but he's saying it from a place that comes from the same place that we all come from, that grew up Motley Crue fans and love that band and listen to their old stuff all the time. And to see him now, I mean, I haven't seen Motley Crue on any of these last tours because, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those deals kind of like Kiss where either you don't care and you go and you have a good time and that's cool, or you go, I don't know if that's how I want to remember them.
Yeah, that's the big thing now is there's a lot of us, these legendary bands that they're like, oh, you know, it's our last tour or we're getting near the end, like Aerosmith's doing it. And But to me, I'm like, I saw them in the 90s and I saw them for $20 and they were that much younger and that much better at the time. So it's like, why would I want to spend money and then, you know, taint what I saw back then?
Right. And pay, you know, 100 times as much.
Oh, yeah.
To do it. Yeah. Forget that.
Most legacy acts I don't really go to unless I can get in for like free or something. I'd be more happy to see kind of a mid-tier band if they're still slugging it out in clubs or theaters or whatever. Of course, Alice comes, I'm going to go see him. But yeah, they, as long as they can hold up their end of the deal, but there's too many of them out there that, that don't do that.
Crazy times we live in, man.
Oh, and I didn't have this on the list, but I don't know if you saw. Did you see that Phil Lewis from LA Guns has a warrant out for his arrest here in Nashville?
Oh, shit. No, what did he do?
I guess the last time they were here in town, they played Basement East, and this woman was in the front row, and she had her phone up doing, like, you know, taking video. And Phil Lewis apparently tried to grab it out of her hand, and he was wrestling it with her with it, and he kicked it out of her hand. She filed, like, assault charges on him.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so I guess there's an open warrant for Phil Lewis, so we may not be seeing LA Guns here in Nashville for a while.
Wow.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I just now remembered that. I forgot all about it. But yeah, that's happening more and more often. These artists are getting frustrated with the people with the phones. But I don't know. If you're in a band like LA Guns, Faster Pussycat, at that level, just be happy people are still coming, guys.
Right. But I can also see how shitty that must be when somebody's just holding that phone up the entire time.
Oh, I don't doubt it's annoying, but let's not be laying your hands or your feet on a concert goer that paid money to see you.
Yeah, that's not recommended. I mean, you got a microphone. You can say, please, you know, thank you for coming and seeing us tonight. But please put down the phones and just enjoy yourselves. Mm-hmm. Try that approach next time. No arrests involved.
So, yeah, no LA Guns in Nashville for a few years, I'm sure. In the news, quote on Eric Singer saying, I know he would have preferred having me play guitar and Kiss over Tommy Thayer. Hey, wait, that's from our interview.
That's right. That is from our interview. We actually got some Blabbermouth coverage. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I was like, it's our once every 4 or 5 years thing. That we get some praise from Blabbermouth.
Thanks, Ace. Thanks for that. That came out of nowhere.
I know, and like Ted Nugent didn't hold anyone hostage, you know, or point a gun to their head, and nobody got eaten by an alligator or anything.
Right,
but we got Ace Frehley makes the headlines, and we should talk about this, though, because we didn't get to really respond live in the interview, but what do you think of that claim that Ace is making?
It makes sense to me. I mean, to me, it was kind of like, no kidding, you know, that's what everybody thinks. You know, Gene probably thinks it, Eric Singer probably thinks it, Doc McGee... 90% of the fans would have rather seen Ace up there on the end of the road tour. It all is one person that don't want it, and that's Paul Stanley. And what Ace Frehley said kind of makes sense, because at that point, if they would have brought Ace back, that would have been part of every interview. You know, everything that Paul Stanley did, the question would be like, you got Ace back, man. That's great. You know, and it, how Ace said, you know, that takes attention off of Kiss, because now people are talking about how cool it is that Ace is back, that Kiss becomes kind of a part of that, that I could see how, you know, you'd say, no, we don't want to do that. We want the focus to be Kiss. Tommy Thayer don't take the focus off of Kiss, but Ace Frehley kind of does, because people are excited that he's back and a part of it again.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of agree with this one, and it's not just us being Ace bootlickers or whatever, but it's just a thing where I've seen a lot of footage of Eric and Tommy doing interviews, and I think they respect each other, and they probably are friends, but I just, knowing what I know about Eric Singer, I think he would have taken having more of a fun band than a technically sound band. I think he would have enjoyed Ace being in the band more than Tommy. Just, that's just my personal opinion. I think the band would have been a lot more fun to watch with Ace in. Maybe in the past, I think it would have worked out fine. In this latest tour, I don't know that Ace was in any position to be in the band, because also they're using click tracks for everything. So
right,
you gotta have something to roll those tapes to, you know.
Yeah, and if you got Ace Frehley in the band, your chance of not timing up right with the tapes or saying something in the wrong place, yeah, goes way up.
Oh yeah, it becomes likely that it's going to be a
mess. Yeah. All I need's a drummer.
Yeah, Ace definitely knows how to put his foot in his mouth or say stuff to where it will make people think he's put his foot in his mouth. But as he's gotten older, I think he is kind of full of himself. But I think some of that is just defense mechanism. Because right. The vibe I got from the interview was we weren't even going to go there with the Gene and Paul stuff. We were not even, it wasn't even on any of our list of any things to cover, but he kept bringing it up. And I was just like, man, he's still pretty upset over a lot of this stuff. And I think there's some, not insecurity, but I think that there's damage done, and I don't think he's over it yet.
I mean, those guys have talked a lot of shit about Ace Frehley over the years. You know, and now he's out there and he's doing all right for himself. And it's good for him to be able to say, hey, you know, I'm doing pretty good. I'm still here. I'm still rocking. I think it's all right.
Well, I still think all of them could just be a little chiller about the whole thing. Just say, you know, we did a lot of great stuff in the past, but I'm working on me now.
Right.
Just to put stuff that way. Why do you have to? It's the whole old phrase, you know, don't blow out someone else's candle and thinking yours is going to get any brighter from doing
right.
It just. It just makes you look bad.
And it should be easier now because Kiss is over. So if Ace is able to let it go and just stop bringing it up in interviews, if Paul and Gene are able to do their thing without saying bad stuff about Ace, I mean, Kiss is over. There's nothing to fight about anymore. So you might as well just roll with it. And one thing I realized that I'm sure you're probably well aware of in the Kiss circles that you run, there's a lot of Tommy bootlickers out there too, you know, people that got really upset over Ace saying that and kind of taking it out of context, where I was like, well, yeah, you know, clearly everybody would rather see Ace there. No, not everybody, because there's still that 10% of fans that really don't like Ace and really don't want him anywhere near Kiss. And now, is that because Ace would mess things up for him? You know, Ace is pretty, he said it himself, he likes to be spontaneous. The Kiss concert, not spontaneous. Like, if you look up spontaneous in the dictionary, the opposite of that word would be the Kiss concert. Ace Frehley isn't that style. So, I mean, what people are saying is correct, where Ace and the band wouldn't work, where Tommy Thayer does.
Yeah.
Because Tommy Thayer plays it exactly like you hear it on the old albums.
Sure, he's a capable professional guy, and he's always done a good job in that role. I've never tried to bash Tommy. He took a gig most people would have taken, but it's the thing with Gene and Paul. It's just, that's the show they want. They want it. as scripted and timed as the Ice Capades. And Ace is not going to work out in that situation. Tommy's tailor made for that. And Eric, too. Eric Singer, you can't get a guy that's more, you know, reliable and in time than Eric Singer. So they had the right lineup. But, like, honestly, once they started going to that route, it was just like the soul kind of got sucked out of seeing them live to me. It just seems so sterile.
I always feel bad for Eric Singer because he's such a phenomenal drummer and he's such a creative guy that you hate to see him in a role where he's just playing the exact same thing over and over and over again. And I mean, nothing against him. He's in Kiss and that's freaking awesome. So I don't fault him for it at all. Plus, it's always easier for him because he's got a longer history with the band. But imagine how much more fun it must have been for him to play as a musician, as a drummer on the Revenge Tour versus what he had to play on the, well, for the last, God knows, 20 years?
Yeah.
How much more fun that must have been for him as a drummer, as a musician.
Oh, I think so, too.
Because Kiss was a way more loose band back then.
Sure. Even in 2009, when I took my kid to see him, they were more fun then, you know, and it was a little looser, but even though Paul's voice was starting to go, but it still felt like a real live performance. But this last tour, I don't know, we've talked that one into the ground, but yeah, it was cool to have Ace on. We'd love to have him come back again. And I'm going to also follow up and say that we're going to bug him again about that Billy Joel cover. Cause I still think we should do it.
Man, it was great. I'd love to have him back on again sometime. You want to go through some of the comments we got on the episode?
Sure.
Because we got some cool ones. Mick Watkins said, excellent episode. The best interview I've heard Ace give in promotion for 10,000 volts, period.
Yeah, I heard that from a few people. That was pretty awesome to hear because he's interviewed with everyone this time.
Yeah, he's done a lot of interviews. And that's why it was funny when we got him. I made the joke after we got done. Just between me and Chris, I'll share it with you guys. Victor ought to do a tournament again, like the Podcast King tournament. But this tournament, you have all 18 podcasts that interviewed Ace Frehley in the last month or two.
That'd be interesting.
I like our chances.
Yeah, I do too after seeing these comments. I was very blown away by the response to it.
Our awesome friend Eric Luzier says this was an awesome interview. You guys must have been so happy doing it. I can't imagine how you guys felt about interviewing Ace. I'm very happy for you guys. Congratulations. We got a lot like that. Todd Zilla chimed in with, did you ask him if he had any Jackson guitars in there? Awesome throwback to one of the episodes we had Todd Zilla on for. We got to figure out a way to get him back on the show again.
Yeah.
Patrick Breen. He said, oh, wow, watching it, and neither of you turned into Chris Farley interviewing De Niro on Saturday Night Live so far.
I think we eventually got there, though.
Yeah, we did. We were fighting it the whole time, I'm sure. And, you know, Patrick Breen mentions he was watching it. That's because Patrick Breen is a Decibel Geek VIP. You can learn more about that by going to patreon.com and looking up Decibel Geek. Getting yourself hooked up on that. All kinds of cool stuff, including unedited video of the whole Ace Frehley thing. It was great. Troy Maturin said, $10 and a dead cat. That could be an awesome song.
Don't give him any ideas. People will be like, is he talking about Peter Criss?
I think that was probably the greatest thing. Like, you're feeling like, wow, holy shit, we're about to interview Ace Frehley. It's about to call, you know, and he's like, hey, let me tell you about a dream I had last night. Never has an interview that I've ever been a part of started better than that.
Oh, no. And it totally happened organically because I had a couple people asking about, did you guys have that from later in the interview and cut it to the beginning? I'm like, no, that's how it started.
No, that's actually it. Yeah.
And we were like, oh, okay.
But no, that was all as spontaneous as Ace Frehley.
Yeah.
Thorborn Olsen chimes in, our awesome friend. He says, funny as hell and interesting indeed. A relaxed Ace Frehley this time. And I think you guys had some questions that caught his attention and not just waffling. Good job, guys.
Nice.
Jean-Eugene DX says, first time I hear Ace Frehley having a real conversation, and I listened to many interviews over the years. After a few minutes with you, he stopped using the regular liners and just had a pleasant conversation. Really, guys, you did it. And Aaron, sorry for your loss. Congratulations. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I appreciate that very much, and awesome, awesome comments. Kevin Jepson says, this may be my favorite interview with Ace in a long time. Such a fun conversation. My old buddy Mike Leopold said, this was one of the best Ace interviews I've ever heard. Keep rocking, Aaron, and you're doing amazing things. Just think, it all started in little old Merrill, Wisconsin. That shows you how far I go back with Mike Leopold. Gregory Mew says, I watched the Patreon video this morning and really enjoyed it. I'm telling you, that's where it's at. And Stacy Sullivan says, best Ace chat ever. Great job, guys. Dan Mills says, I like the Billy Joel pitch. It was worth a try. My own pitch is for an Ace Frehley Al Pacino podcast. That would be epic.
Oh, man. you would need subtitles for that one.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, wow. Ray Kuhn says, dude, I'm so happy for you both. I love the episode. Ace even spoke about stuff I don't think anyone ever heard about. Hell yeah, brothers. Jeremy Asbrock from the Rock City Machine Company and the Ace Frehley Band says, great interview. He sounded very relaxed. I've heard that a couple of times, how relaxed Ace was with us. That's cool. I like that. Warren Edward LaRue Baker says, best interview with Ace I've ever heard.
Wow.
Thank you guys for asking questions that nobody else asks.
Well, thank you for the compliment, but I'm going to defer to Tom Snyder for the best Ace interview ever.
We'll take second best.
Yeah, I'll take second place, but I'm not going to disrespect Tom Snyder that way.
And then finally, Brent Milhouse says, I have listened to a lot of the more recent Ace interviews leading up to the release of 10,000 Volts, but this is by far my favorite. Congrats to Chris and Aaron for an amazing interview. Chris, thanks for asking about the New York Dolls / Arthur Kane connection.
Oh, man, that whole segment of the talk just warmed my heart hearing him talk about his friendship with Arthur. I love that.
Cool, yeah. To see him kind of get off the beaten path of the radio DJ interview questions that I'm sure he gets over and over and over again. So, you know, we just wanted to have fun with Ace. Wanted to make him relaxed. We didn't want to pound his brain with, you know, minute Kiss trivia. I mean, we wanted to, but we also wanted to have a good time.
Oh, yeah. There were several questions we didn't get to, but then there was also several where, in hindsight, I'm looking at the question going, there's no fucking way he remembers that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like super nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, we did get him to talk about Life in the Woods. Yeah, that's a weird song.
See, Ace, don't lie.
No, he's like, yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, pretty cool. We get any Kiss FAQ love off of this one?
We did, actually, yeah. Somebody made a post on there, and then there's a lot of great feedback on there. I can pull that up real quick. It was a poster named Macum Kiss that posted saying, wow, and he must be European because he goes, wow, I'm chuffed for Chris and Aaron, but holy moly, Ace rates himself. I could have been a stand-up comedian. John Belushi told me I'm the funniest guy he met. Peter met him first, but he liked me more. Okay, so the interview was interesting, to say the least. God only knows how those four egos managed to stay in a band together for 5 years, never mind the extra ones. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a ton of really great stuff. Fantastic interview. Ace sounds so comfortable and relaxed, talking openly. Let me see. One guy said, Phyllis Simmons says, nice. It's been a while since I've listened to the Geeks. So many podcasts to try to get to. It's impossible to get to them all or even most of them, but I'll give this a listen later tonight. Love Guns says, wow, fantastic interview, great stories. This is the most candid Ace has been in years or decades, I'd say.
Wow.
He's actually so much into the conversation. Very, very good interview, good stories.
Wow, nice.
Big Ed said, you guys did a great job as always. I truly enjoyed it. And then somebody else commented on Phyllis's post saying it's been a while since they listened. They said, truth, I hadn't listened to Decibel Geek in a while and am questioning that choice. Aaron and Chris have a flow between them. That said, Ace was kind of painful to listen to. I get that he's aging. I get his memory isn't what it used to be. That said, some of the words coming out of that man's mouth were cringe, but somehow we still love the guy.
Yeah.
One of the best podcasts around. Great job. That comes from Alive 2 Side 4. I love these usernames.
Yeah.
Greasepaint 74 says, terrific interview. Great questions. Great dynamic between all of you. Well done.
Sweet.
Oh, and then one more comment from a person named Bank saying, there seems to be a competition between rock musicians who spent more time with John Belushi.
I could see why. Yeah.
But a lot of good feedback there, and that's a tough crowd over there.
Right, yeah. And then I saw Blabbermouth. All them comments were just people based off the headline.
As always.
Nobody that actually probably listened to the show. Just, you know, we hate Ace or... we love Ace, and that was about it.
I mean, and your numbers do get a boost when Blabbermouth covers you, but not as much as you might think, because most people just fucking read the headline. They don't listen to the podcast.
Right. They don't even open. Well, they open it up enough to make a comment.
Yeah, I mean, you get a bit of a boost, and it's always great to get coverage by them. But, you know, we learned a long time ago, just do the show we want to do and fuck the numbers. Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah. Too many crazy stories been told that been skipped over by the music media, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Alice in Chains beating up Firehouse in a bathroom, and you guys don't cover that? How is that not newsworthy?
Oh, man. Yeah, they could have clickbaited that up so good. You've got a million
And I guarantee
clicks.
Somebody's going to comment on this episode and go, wait, where was that story?
Way back in the archives. Start at number one and work your way up forward. Catch up with us.
About halfway through. Are you ready to do the Camaro segment?
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for the awesome feedback on the Ace Frehley episode. The answer to the question is yes, it was a thrill, and no, I didn't flip my desk over. Only lifted it a little.
Now, if it was Tommy Thayer, that would be a different story.
Whatever. All right. So we're ready to do my segment right here in the middle. We're going to talk about Rockstar Death Days. I'm going to tell you about some cool new albums that are out now or on the very near horizon. And also, we're going to talk about some album anniversaries. Let's start there. We'll go back 20 years, right about the time you're listening to this. When this comes out, we're celebrating the anniversaries of all these albums. 20 years ago, back in 2004, we've got Wasp, The Neon God Part 1, the big epic rock opera in 2004, the 11th Wasp studio album. I can't think of any songs off it, but I do know that it's some pretty epic stuff.
I don't think I like that one very much. I need to go back and revisit it because I haven't listened to it in years.
I can tell you, as far as being a CD collector, those Neon God CDs are two of the hardest ones to find. I finally found them both. And man, was I excited when I did, because I mean, I got all the other ones. Those were the last two I had to find. And so it was pretty cool when I finally found them. I do need to spend some time with them because I'm not familiar with it really at all. This album, unsurprisingly, in 2004, does not chart in the United States. Here's another album celebrating a 20-year anniversary. One of my favorite bands, one of my favorite albums, Local H. Whatever Happened to PJ Souls?
That's the name of the album?
That's the name of the album. You know who PJ Souls is?
Yeah, she's in Rock and Roll High School with the Ramones.
Yeah, Riff Randall. Yeah. And that's the title of the album. It's their fifth studio album. It's got some awesome songs on it, man. It's got Buffalo Trace on there. They got That's What They All Say. and one of my all-time favorite tunes by any band ever, California Songs. What a great tune. Mm. 2004, Wasp, Local H. What do they got in common? Neither one of them charting in the U.S. It's yeah. Tough times. Let's jump back 25 years. Here's a band that's on the charts in 1999 in a big way. The debut album from Buck Cherry. It doesn't seem right when you look back and think about it. 1999, Buck Cherry debut album. We've already established that American Hair Band by Tuff changed the vision of everything and made those bands cool again. Buck Cherry, kind of a throwback to a Sunset Strip kind of sound and attitude. But in 1999, man, they are pretty damn popular.
They were that generation's Greta Van Fleet. They were like the throwback band that was going to save rock and roll. I remember a lot of positive press for them. And I like those first few records that they had. Then they just started kind of repeating the same record over and over again.
I don't know, man. I like Buck Cherry. I liked them back then because 1999, I'm working at Z104. So I'm having to hear a lot of these bands over and over and over again. And so in between the Three Doors Down and the Creed, I'll take me some Buck Cherry.
Oh, yeah, they stood out, and the fact that they took the Shock Me riff and turned into Lit Up, because it's totally the same riff, is awesome. And then I saw them with, it was Buck Cherry, Black Stone Cherry, and Saliva, I saw at the Cannery back in those days. But it was when the second Buck Cherry album was out, and I'll say they were fucking awesome live. And then I saw them open for Kiss on the next tour, like around 2009, and they were great then, too. They're really good live if you haven't seen them.
Nice. Yeah, I like Buck Cherry. Here's a cool little piece of trivia for you. DreamWorks Records. I didn't even know DreamWorks got into the music business, but they did with Buck Cherry. That's their first ever gold album.
Mm.
It's produced by Terry Date. It goes to number 74. That's pretty good for a hard rock band in 1999, and those guys are going to go on to sell a whole lot more albums in the next few years after this. Another band celebrating a 25-year anniversary of their album, it's Gwar with We Kill Everything. It's their seventh studio album, including classics like Fucking an Animal, Penile Drip, and Fish Fuck.
It's a very emotional record.
It's got some great stuff on it, man. This was one of the last fun Gwar albums, I think, because after this in 99, Gwar gets a lot heavier, which is cool too, because I like heavy Gwar, but they used to do more just kind of rock songs that were funny and all kinds of different stuff. This album's all over the place. They're doing some really heavy stuff. They're doing some just kind of hard rock stuff. It's all highly offensive, which is great because it's Gwar, but It's a pretty good album. It's one of my favorites by them.
Where did that one land on the charts?
Like most Gwar albums, it doesn't chart at all. But that's okay. These guys' bread and butter has always been their live show.
Oh, yeah.
To this day. So now let's jump back 30 years to 1994. I got three big albums right here for you. The first one is the fourth studio album from the Rollins Band. The album's called Wait, and this one is the one with the song Liar on it.
They're one hit.
Yeah, that was on Beavis and Butthead. Who could forget that episode? Beavis, Liar!
Liar, yeah.
And then it was huge after that. That album charts at 33 in the U.S. Pretty damn good for 1994. Another one, this one pretty popular as well. The second album from Hole, Live Through This. You know, there's always rumors that Kurt Cobain wrote the songs for this album.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Kurt Cobain is dead a week after it's released. Bass player Kristen Pfaff is dead 2 weeks after that.
If you want to do some Googling, you'll find hours and hours of entertaining material about that whole situation.
Yeah, that's wild. Rolling Stone called it the 106th greatest album of all time.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. It's a good album. I like it. I actually owned it, but it's not up there.
No, it's got a couple of good songs on it. Charts at number 52 in the U.S., goes to number 13 in the U.K. Now, out of the three celebrating 30-year anniversaries, this one's my favorite. I don't know if we've ever really talked about this band before, so I'm interested to know yours and the listener's opinion on The Offspring, because they're celebrating the 30-year anniversary of their huge breakthrough album, Smash. It was their third studio album. It goes 6 times platinum, known for songs like Come Out and Play, Gotta Get Away, and Self-Esteem.
Yeah.
Were you an Offspring fan when this came out?
Not really a fan, but I was playing in a band at the time, and we covered Keep 'Em Separated and Self-Esteem, but because they were pretty easy to play. But I'm not really a fan of The Offspring. I really don't go out and intentionally listen to them, but you cannot deny that they created some catchy fucking earworm songs.
Oh, yeah. I like The Offspring. I love this album when it came out. Always remember the beginning. Time to relax and listen to some music. You remember how that album started with the guy talking at the beginning?
I don't remember what he said, but I don't remember what he said either.
But it's funny. He like sets the tone, and then all of a sudden the guitars kick in. You know, so they were a good heavy band, hard rocking, like you said, very very catchy riffs, and I got all their stuff. I like The Offspring.
Yeah, I like them overall. I wouldn't call myself a fan, but I respect them.
Right on. And I want to know in the comments section what you listeners think of The Offspring, fans or not. I'm kind of interested how that plays out. So now let's jump back 35 years to 1989. Got a couple of classics right here for you. The fourth studio album from The Cult. This was the one that broke them huge in America. They were already pretty damn big in the UK. I'm talking about Sonic Temple.
Love that album.
Kind of divisive among the fans of theirs at the time, because it was a big leap because they've got Bob Rock producing the album.
He made them sound huge.
Right, yeah, so they were kind of an underground thing.
You know what I would want to hear? Like, the album before that, I believe, was the one that had Love Removal Machine.
Yeah?
I would love to hear that song with Bob Rock's production. I bet it would have sounded amazing.
Fire Woman does become their biggest hit song, so you would see another good song like that produced in this way, especially in 1989. You know, it had to sound like that. It lifted these guys up and made them a worldwide band.
It's the Matt Sorum effect. Wasn't he the drummer at the time?
No, not on this one. Eric Singer actually plays on the demo for the album.
Who plays on the record?
Somebody else, a studio drummer.
Les Warner? Because he was with them before.
I'd have to look it up. I can't think of the guy's name.
Answer our question in the comments.
Yeah, I know who it is. I can't think of his name. He was a studio drummer. But I do know Eric Singer played on the demos.
Huh.
This album goes to number 10 in the United States, and it is The Cult's highest ever charting album in the United States. So I said I had two classics. Man, here's another one. Here's something they got in common with The Cult. This is also this band's fourth full-length studio album, and it is also this band's highest charting album ever. I'm talking about Great White. It's the 35-year anniversary of Twice Shy. This thing was huge, and it was the cover of an Ian Hunter song, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, that becomes a number 5 U.S. single and pulls this album up to number 9. That video was on MTV constantly, all times a day, and Great White was one of the biggest bands around at that time.
Yeah, they really rode the wave. But yeah, that video, which I loved at first, loved the song. Man, by the end of that year, I was like, I never need to fucking hear this song again. Because it just got shoved down everyone's throat. It crossed over into pop charts, I think.
Yeah, it really was something else. And it made me also not really care for that song. Like, I like pretty much the whole album is really good. But that song is the one I could do without. And it's probably maybe only because I've heard it a million times.
The one I love on there is House of Broken Love with that extended solo at the beginning of the song. I fucking love that song.
That song is killer. I mean, when you talk about great vocalists and you don't mention Jack Russell, it's because you haven't heard that song.
Yeah. They were a great blues rock band for that time.
For sure. All right. So then we jump back 40 years, the anniversary of the 1984 release by Rush. Their 10th full-length studio album, Grace Under Pressure. This is the era of Rush that I don't really get into too much. I mean, this one is, I mean, it's a little less keyboardy than Signals. But, and I really try to like all Rush. I really respect the hell out of that band. The musicianship, the songwriting is all top level stuff. I still love that first album the best, but I try to get into all of it. This is the period in the 80s that I just can't get down with. Rush don't need an over-the-top keyboard player in the band.
I like it more now than I did years ago, because years ago the keyboards would turn me off so much that I've learned to kind of accept it a little more, and I've gotten it. And actually, the time I saw them live with my wife on the Clockwork Angels tour, those songs had a kind of a beefed up sound live, and they were much better.
Yeah, I bet. Rush still having no problem selling albums in 84, number 10 in the US, number 5 in the UK, and number 4 in Canada, eh? From there, we slide on back 45 years to 1979. Here's one that I know is near and dear to your heart, Chris. The 9th full-length studio album, 4th to the last for Thin Lizzy, Black Rose.
Oh, such a great record.
A rock legend.
Yeah, that one, I waffle back and forth on that one being my favorite. Depending on the week, that one is my favorite a lot of the time.
It's a pretty great album. I mean, a couple of songs are my favorite Thin Lizzy songs, Waiting for an Alibi.
Yep.
And I really like the song S&M.
Be Cooler, Be Cast Out, or no, Black Spinner Circle. I did a Thin Lizzy discussion with them.
Yeah.
And I shared a story about when I was driving when I got into Thin Lizzy, it was right after we had Greg Troyan on to talk, kind of school us on them.
Yeah.
And so I just started diving in, listening to them all the time. And that's when I was driving for Lyft. And so I was just like, well, fuck it. I want to listen to Thin Lizzy. So they're going to have to listen to Thin Lizzy, and maybe I'll turn some people onto the band. And a lot of times it worked. Like they'd hear, like, I'd play Jailbreak or something like that. And I'd be like, oh, who is this? And I'm like, oh, it's, you know, the band that does The Boys Are Back in Town. They're like, oh yeah, I know that song. I'm like, this is the same band. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'll check more of them out. So it worked great then. But there was one time I was driving this couple. This couple couldn't have been more than 23 years old. And S&M came on. And they're listening to it. And they're like, is he singing about what I think he's singing about? And they go, and then Phil goes, S&M. And I was like, oh, this is awkward. So I had to kind of explain, oh, this is a Irish rock band from the 70s. And they sang about some wild stuff, and then I talked my way back into their good graces. But at first I was like, these people think I'm a fucking weirdo.
Right, yeah. You get into this Uber driver's car and he's playing us porno music. Gotta show our ID before you get in the car with Chris Sinzak.
Yeah, that was a time where my recruitment into Thin Lizzy fandom backfired in a major way. Like, what kind of weirdo is driving us right now?
Yeah, you never know. They might have liked it.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe they were into that sort of thing.
That album goes to 81 in the U.S. and number 2 in the U.K. And it's a damn good one. I highly recommend it. All right, from there, we got 2 more. And these are both 50-year anniversaries. Big ones. From 1974. First up, we got the 3rd full-length studio album from the legendary band Blue Oyster Cult with Secret Treaties, man. This is a killer album. It's got Flaming Telepaths on it, Harvester of Eyes, Career of Evil, and Astronomy, a bunch of other great stuff. The band wrote all the music, but the lyrics are all created by outside writers. It's kind of weird the way Blue Oyster Cult did that. They had like a manager who was also their producer, who was also their main lyric writer.
Was he the guy that asked for more cowbell?
No, that was Bruce Dickinson, famous producer.
the less famous Bruce Dickinson.
Uh-huh, exactly. At the time this album comes out, Melody Maker magazine did a poll in England at the time. Mm-hmm. They're not just going to vote this album of the year. They're going to vote this the greatest album of all time.
Wow.
In 1975, the people of England united and said, we've been waiting generations for this, and it's finally happened. The greatest album of all time, Blue Oyster Cult, Secret Treaties.
Wow.
Yep. That's what they thought of it at the time. All right, so then we got one more. This is another big one. 50 years for the second studio album, aptly titled Second Helping, from Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's the follow-up to their highly successful debut album from 1 year before. And this one, it solidifies Lynyrd Skynyrd as one of the best new bands of the 70s. You know, an opening for The Who on the Quadrophenia tour probably doesn't hurt build that fan base either.
That's an interesting combination of bands on the same bill.
Yeah, The Who must have saw them and said, holy shit, what is this? Wasn't really nothing like Skynyrd before Skynyrd, like hard rock and like real Southern rock.
Yeah, they were definitely unique for the times. And then they had a million imitators after that.
Right. Of course, this is the one with Sweet Home Alabama on it. So it's huge. It goes to number 12 in the U.S. Me, myself, I personally think The Needle in the Spoon is one of the greatest rock songs of all time.
That's one of my favorite songs by them.
Such an awesome groove to that song. Something dark and eerie about it, too.
Oh, they would touch on some heavy stuff in their lyrics.
Yeah. So there you have it. Those are your album anniversaries. To celebrate, you want to pull out that Skynyrd, the Blue Oyster Cult. Man, Thin Lizzy, Black Rose, you got to do it. Great White, that's a great album. Even if you've heard Once Bitten, Twice Shy a bazillion times, The Cult, Sonic Temple, when was the last time you listened to some Cult? Offspring, Smash, I love that one. Some Guar, some Buck Cherry, even some Local H and some Weird Wasp. It's all there for you to celebrate. Those are your album anniversaries. So let's look at some people we need to remember. Right around this time with some rock star death days. We're going to kick things off right now with four of them. Four big ones right here off the top. All died on April 5th throughout the years. So keep that in mind. All four of these people share that death day. The first one, it's Kurt Cobain. We mentioned him a little bit earlier. This is the anniversary of his passing at the age of 27 back in 1994. Suicide, question mark? Nobody knows. There's a lot of speculation about that. What I do know about Kurt Cobain is, man, you know what? He was a hell of a songwriter, and he left an indelible mark with his music on the world of rock and roll and the world in general. It was, that whole thing was a cultural deal. You know, people were, one day they're, you know, putting Aquanet in their hair and wearing a lot of makeup and trying to look pretty and good. And the next day they're wearing sweater vests and baggy ass pants and looking like they're getting their clothes out of the dumpster.
Yeah. Or work at a gas station.
Yeah, I mean, so it was weird to see the change of being like, you looked at a rock star like they were something otherworldly, you know, they were unique and dressed crazy and normal people didn't look like those guys, to all of a sudden Kurt Cobain kind of ushers in this thing where the guy up on stage could be the same guy that sells you a beer, you know, you couldn't tell the difference if you had him in a lineup. But the music, you know, the music is, the guitar, it's catchy as hell. Kind of said it about the Offspring. They were so good at writing those catchy hooks. Mm-hmm. Kurt Cobain was a master of that.
He had a real innate sense of melody for that time. I'm not going to, because he definitely, he would lean on minor chords and stuff to kind of keep that dreary sound to it. But he knew... he knew how to direct the music to kind of work with teen angst of that time.
That is true. And, you know, this is the time that people are going to talk about Kurt Cobain as this anniversary comes up. So you guys are getting the heads up on that. Going to be a lot of sad, sad people in sweater vests out there. So.
I remember coming home from school and seeing it break on MTV when they talked about it. That was that was like a Kennedy assassination moment for our generation. You know, you remember where you were.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, pretty wild. Let's see. So then also on the 5th, back in 1998, you want to go out like a rock star? Let me give you the formula. You get shit-faced drunk, hop into your sports car. Don't put on no seatbelt. Start ripping down the roads at 100 miles an hour in some bad, bad weather and then mess around with your cell phone at the same time. That's how Cozy Powell went out.
Oh, is that how he died?
At the age of 50, driving a sports car without a seatbelt, using his cell phone while intoxicated in a bad weather situation, clipping along at over 100 miles per hour. Mm. Not a living combination.
Not at all.
That's wild. Also on the 5th, back in 2002, at the age of 34, we lost Lane Staley from Alice in Chains. He died of drugs. Bad, bad drugs. And what a shame.
Complete waste of talent.
Yeah, so talented, so awesome. And if you know somebody that's got bad drug problems, try to help them out if you can. Some people are beyond help. Lane Staley was. He had everybody in the world pulling for him, and he still lost that battle.
I think I heard he had been, like, dead in his apartment for days or weeks before they found him.
Yeah, because he rarely ever came out.
Shut himself off from the world.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. You think, hey, these guys are rock stars. They got it all. The world at their fingertips. Sometimes that's not the case. Or it is the case and it doesn't even matter because something like that becomes more important than every person that ever bought one of their albums or every person that wanted to be able to see them live. You know, that shit takes over your life. It's terribly sad.
Yeah.
He's a perfect example of it. All right. And so one more on the 5th. Four people maybe don't have a whole lot in common. We got to remember back in 2007, at the age of 51, the passing of KISS guitarist Mark St. John.
What year was it? 2001?
2007.
2007. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, things really went downhill for old MSJ.
Oh, a lot of drug problems.
Yeah, especially after he was relieved from KISS. White Tiger never really took off, and he just kind of fell into doing drugs. A lot of meth is what I read.
Yeah, and I know he was, before he died, he was serving time in jail and got beat the hell up by other inmates.
Yeah, they contribute that to his dying. Like, he never, the ass beating that he took while he was in jail was so bad that he never fully ever recovered from it.
That's really sad.
And complications from that fight gone bad for him contributed to his death.
Yeah.
Which it is too bad because, I mean, here it is. KISS is done now. You know, he could have, I don't know.
I don't know that he would have done much.
But he could have, he would have made appearances.
He was starting to do the convention circuit not long before he died.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and he was starting to make money that way. He could have had at least some money come in from that because KISS fans always want to meet anyone connected to the band, you know.
Right, yeah, he could have been at Creatures Fest.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those are the four that are all on the 5th. Eerie. Here's one from the 7th, back in 1989, at the age of 48, one of a kind, Wendy O. Williams.
Yeah.
And she had some problems, man. She tried to kill herself a few times. She almost overdosed in 1997. She tried to kill herself in the most metal way possible in 1993 by trying to drive a knife into her chest with a hammer.
God.
That didn't work out so hot.
Jesus Christ.
But a few years later in 98, she went out into the woods and shot herself.
I'm kind of surprised no one's done a documentary on her life yet.
Because she's such a fascinating individual.
Yeah, because that's a movie right there.
I am totally enamored with Wendy O. Williams because, I mean, I knew of her from, like, crazy pictures in, my uncle's old Hit Parader magazines, but I never knew about the Plasmatics coming up. Really, by the time I'm buying my own stuff, the Plasmatics are pretty well gone.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about them until years later, purely because of the connection to Gene.
Right, yeah, that other album, the Wendy O. Williams Wow album, that's got Ace on it, it's got Eric on it, I think Paul's on it, Vinny's on it, mm-hmm. Gene's on it.
Yeah, the whole Creatures lineup plus Ace is playing on that album.
Yeah, and that's a really good album.
Do you remember what Gene's bass player name was?
Oh, I can't think of it. I know it's something Von something.
Reginald Van Helsing.
That's what it was.
He was a vampire hunter.
I guess he couldn't use his real name.
No.
By contractual reasons, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, shit. Wendy O. Williams, fascinating character. Definitely left her mark in the world of rock and roll history.
She's a great addition to hard rock history and punk history. I never could get on board with the music. Her voice, to me, sounds like sandpaper. But I respect her for who she was, and she was a real rebel in the music industry. Check out the Plasmatics performance on Tom Snyder. It's on YouTube.
Nice. Yeah, love it.
It's a lot of Tom Snyder in this week's episode.
That's good, man. That means we're doing something right. Yeah. All right, so then also we got to remember on the 7th, the passing just last year, 2023, at the age of 71, former guest of the show and all-around awesome guy, John Regan.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about him. We talk about Fraley's Comet, Four by Fate, stuff like that. But, man, he played with the Stones. He played with David Bowie, Peter Frampton, Billy Idol, Michael Monroe, and even David Lee Roth.
Yeah, just an incredibly nice, genuine human being. And just one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And it's like, I wonder how he survived the music industry for as long as he did, because he's such a good person.
Right, yeah. I guess nobody ever wanted to screw him over because he was so awesome. Go back in the archives to episode 82, way back. Check out our conversation with John. And you'll see what a sweet, nice man he really was. So then it takes us back to 1992 on the 10th of April at the age of 38. Probably the quintessential rock and roll comedian. Got to remember Sam Kinison. Came out with the song Wild Thing in 1988. Some of his comedy albums would be half comedy and then half him doing rock songs with a bunch of cool rock stars playing with him.
Yeah. Always somebody that I wish I could have interviewed. He's definitely one of the people that I feel like I missed out on.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's my all-time favorite comedian.
Really?
Yeah, I can't think of anybody that made me laugh as hard as Sam Kinison. And the fact the way he looked, you know, he looked like a rock star. He acted like a rock star. He was just too cool, man. He was on his way to Nevada from California for a big sold-out show. I mean, it's 1992. This man's still doing damn good for himself. He's in a Pontiac Trans Am, clipping along on his way to the show, gets killed by a drunk driver.
Yeah.
And it's a wild story, too. They say his last words, because he got banged up, but he got out of the car, and he didn't seem like he was in that bad a shape, but he had some pretty bad internal injuries, they'd realize. Mm-hmm. He sat down on the side of the road, and he looked out as if he was talking to somebody who wasn't there.
Yeah.
And he was like, why? And he paused for a second. He'd go, but why now? You know, because he was... worked so hard his whole life to get to where he was. And then he was just like, oh, okay, all right, okay. And then he passed away.
Yeah, his best friend Carl LeBove does a good job of telling that story on Mark Maron's podcast years ago. But it's a great recitation of what Sam went through. His whole history is fascinating, from being a preacher when he was younger, getting into comedy, then his connection to rock and roll. He was a man of a lot of vices, but also somebody that was kind of the life of the party.
Yeah, multi-talented, super awesome, best comedian ever, Sam Kinison. So then we're going to go to the 14th back in 2010. Man, this is a big one. This one hurt. At the age of 48, we lost Type O Negative lead vocalist Peter Steele to a lifetime of drugs and alcohol. It took its toll on him. It wore him out, gave him a lot of problems at the end of his life. Tough to know that right towards the end there, he was working on new music at the time. Yeah. But when he passed away, Type O Negative died with him.
How old was he?
48.
48, Jesus.
And that sucks because Type O Negative is another super unique band that when you hear them, you know immediately who it is.
And would probably be playing arenas right now if he had lived.
Yeah. But at the time, they said, you know, we probably could find somebody that could do the songs and do a pretty good Peter Steele impersonation, but it wouldn't be Peter Steele, and we wouldn't want to present Type O Negative in that way. And kudos to them. They've never done it.
Yeah. Johnny Kelly now playing drums for Quiet Riot.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, he was with them when I seen him that time, and they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so then we'll do one more. This is another one that's going to be near and dear to you. You want to remember on the 15th back in 2001, we lost Joey Ramone at the age of 49. He was diagnosed with cancer in 1995, but he lived for another 6 years. The album You Know, which was, I guess, technically his last album, but it was released after he died. It took over 12 years with all the legal wranglings that had to go on to get those tracks to finally be released in 2012. It's a pretty great album.
And I love that one, but the one that he released before he died, Don't Worry About Me, man, that's a solo album, but that album eclipses a lot of Ramone's releases, in my opinion. It's a great record.
I agree with that, too. That's a really good one. So, I mean, punk rock icon. People wear his shirts. They've never even heard the music. They don't even care.
And for another anniversary, as of this recording, yesterday was the exact 50th anniversary of the Ramones' first performance.
Wow.
Yep.
Yep, pretty iconic right there. I always thank you for making me into a big Ramones fan.
Well, I thank the End of the Century documentary for making me one way late in the game, but at least better late than never.
Yep. So there you have it. These are the ones you want to remember. Kurt Cobain, Cozy Powell, Lane Staley, Mark St. John, Wendy O. Williams, John Regan, Sam Kinison, Peter Steele, and Joey Ramone. Around this time you're listening to this, beginning of April, those are the ones you want to remember. Right on. So we've looked to the past with album anniversaries. We've also looked to the past with people that we've lost over the years. But now it's time to take a look into the future and the now. So as you know, we kind of skipped GeekWire last week because, well, we just couldn't help but bring you the Ace Frehley interview because we couldn't wait for you guys to hear it. So we skipped a week of GeekWire, and now we got a little catching up to do here. These are a couple of albums that are already out, and then we'll get to ones that are coming your way. So the first one I want to tell you about came out on the 27th of March. It's Paul Di'Anno's War Horse. It's an EP called Stop the War. It's out right now on Brave Words Records. The title track has a video. You know what? Paul Di'Anno's been through a lot, but he still sounds pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah?
I like the song. I thought he sounded great. I think I'm going to pick that up. I mean, hell, it's 2024, and Paul Di'Anno's still alive, and he's still putting out music. If you're a fan of the early Iron Maiden stuff and you're a fan of his, show him some love and pick up his new EP.
I didn't know Brave Words had their own record company.
I didn't either. But then I saw it and thought, well, that makes perfect sense. If a cool-ass team like Brave Words is going to get into the music business, they're going to be signing guys like Paul Di'Anno, and I'm glad they're doing it.
Right.
All right, so then on the 3rd, a new Savatage album came out.
What?
Yeah, it's called Curtain Call. Now, John Oliva says they put everything they had and really took their time to make this album the best it could be because it will most likely be their last one.
I didn't know they were still a thing.
Yeah, this is it. This is probably it. And what I like about Savatage and how they've done this is they've even gone back into the past and included members of the band throughout the years to make appearances on this album.
Yeah.
I wish my favorite band would do something like that.
Yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, Curtain Call, it's out now. And if you're a Sabotage fan, man, they sound like they really worked their ass off on this one, so you're probably going to love it. You want to check that one out. Speaking of bands you didn't know even still existed, tell me what you know about the band Hawkwind.
I just know that Lemmy was in it in the 70s. I know some of their music from back then.
Exactly. That's the one thing that everybody knows about Hawkwind, is that Lemmy was in that band before Motorhead.
And they had a chick that would go topless that would dance with them on stage, I think.
That's a plus. I'm surprised Lemmy left.
Yeah, I know. You think he would stick around for that.
And I was thinking about that, too. When someone as cool as Lemmy leaves your band, I mean, you got to think 9 times out of 10, it's over. Your band is never going to do anything ever again. But not these guys. So it's English psychedelic future rock, and they're back with their 36th full-length studio album.
36?
These guys have been putting out albums throughout the years pretty steadily.
They're like the King Gizzard of the 70s.
Their debut album came out in 1970, and they never stopped ever since. This new album's coming out on Cherry Red Records, and it is available now.
I got to see what a Hawkwind album sounds like in 2024.
I can tell you, I saw a picture of them. As you would expect, they're all old men.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, they have to look old, I'm sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, if they've got fans enough that have kept them alive all these years, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You got to give it to Hawkwind for that. All right, so then I got three more. We'll be seeing these released on April 12th. First off, we got an album from Blue Oyster Cult called Ghost Stories. It's kind of a new album. It's kind of cool, the idea of this. We talked about AI a little bit earlier in the show. Well, what Blue Oyster Cult did was they went and dug up some old tapes, and they used AI to fix them up. So what you're getting is an album full of these unreleased songs, all stuff from the late 70s to the early 80s, and a track from 2012. What they used was called AI demixing software. So it'll take something that's recorded and re-break it down from the tape into tracks if it's all recorded in one sitting.
Right.
Or the tape you have is the final product of all the other mixes put together. They can go in with this software and demix it back into its tracks, and then they can fix it up from there.
So when is Kiss going to do this with Hotter Than Hell?
Kiss could do this with a lot of stuff, I bet. Because, I mean, if you look at some of that stuff that was on Gene Simmons' vault that's almost unlistenable, it could use this treatment, I think. And then you get cool versions of these songs that are worthy to put on an album. That's pretty damn cool.
I'll be interested to hear it just for the technology alone.
I'd be interested to hear it for kick-ass Blue Oyster Cult songs that I've never heard before.
I really need to dive more into them. Like, I've never done a deep dive into their catalog. I've probably missed out.
They've got some pretty awesome stuff. I would start with that since, hey, since you're celebrating the anniversary anyway, I'd start with Secret Treaties.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's the greatest album ever released, so I have to listen to it.
That's what the people of 1975 England believed.
Are we sure that Buck Dharma didn't just conduct that study, like, or his brother or some shit?
I don't know.
Nelson Dharma, author.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're a Blue Oyster Cult fan, that's pretty damn awesome. So then another one coming out on the 12th, you can probably also file this one under bands you didn't know were still coming out with albums. Riot is back. Well, technically today, nowadays, they're known as Riot 5.
I actually like that. I've heard two songs off of this. It's really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've expressed that to a couple of people that love the early stuff, which I do too, and like, oh, fuck them. I'm not going to support them. I'm like, if it's good, I'm sorry, but good music's good music.
Yeah, this is Riot's 17th full-length studio album. It's called Mean Streets. The album cover features a flat-nosed monkey man driving a hot rod.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No, I'm just making that up.
Oh, I thought I actually believed that.
but I knew you'd believe it.
Yeah, they're the kings of terrible album covers.
Yeah, I don't know what the album cover looks like for this one. The song is good. The one I heard sounded pretty great. Pretty kick-ass. Let's
leave the primates out of your album cover, please.
Yeah. Hey, this one's produced by your boy, Bruno Ravel.
Really?
Yeah.
So everybody's from New Jersey. That makes sense.
And it's out on the 12th on Atomic Fire Records, the latest from Riot. And here's one that we've all been looking forward to since last year. Chris, you introduced me to this band, introduced a lot of people to this band, maybe reintroduced people to this band because they've been around for quite a while. And now they're back with their 9th full-length studio album. They've been releasing some singles leading up to this, including back to last year, a single that was so good it forced Chris Sinzak to change the entire format of the best of the end of the year episode that we do, and he featured a single by the band Gunn.
Oh, yeah.
So on the 12th, their 9th full-length studio album is finally coming out. It's called Hombres, and I'm going to be getting it.
I've heard some other Gunn material, and do you want my honest take?
Yeah.
Not really a fan.
Really?
No. That one song was amazing. A lot of their other stuff, nothing like it.
Oh, dang. So we got ourselves a real hardcore superstar situation here, huh?
What do you mean? I like a lot of their stuff.
Oh, okay. I just remember that one song was so epic, and then none of the rest of it could really stand up.
Well, just remember, you can get those McKay's bucks, Aaron.
All right. Well, everybody, it was Chris's idea. He said Gunn was awesome. He played that song and convinced the rest of us.
I said that song was awesome.
Maybe you still like the rest of it. Give it a chance. If you feel like it based on Chris's awesome re-review.
I'm just being honest.
It's available on the 12th. So there you have it. New albums coming your way from Blue Oyster Cult, Riot, Gunn. Bunch of cool stuff. Paul Di'Anno, Savatage's last album. Got any Hawkwind fans out there? Let us know in the comments section. So there you have it. That's the Camaro segment. That's Everything I Know, and then some.
I still think Hawkwind is one of the greatest band names ever.
It's an awesome band name.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because it's psychedelic future rock.
Yeah, that's a great genre.
Yeah.
They've really cornered the market on that one.
That explains the longevity.
Yeah, they're my favorite whatever futuristic space rock psychedelic band.
Like, I'm looking for a futuristic psychedelic rock band. What do you got? Hawkwind's got a new album.
I've got Lemmy and a chick with really big tits. Yeah. AC/DC back in the news. You know, they put put tickets on sale for a European tour that's going to be taking place. They sold 1.5 million tickets in one day.
Holy shit.
That's insane.
What are we going to do when these bands are gone? What are people going to do? What rock bands are people going to get that excited about?
Hawkwind.
I'm sorry to say, not even Hawkwind can save us now.
Hawkwind's going to become a meme on this show.
We got to raise up the next level of bands.
Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, like I was thinking, well, you know, like Cliff Williams isn't even going to be at this one. So it's like, it's Brian and Angus now. So it's like, is that really AC/DC? And you were right. You were like, nah, people are going to still turn out and see them. And 1.5 million tickets.
I think it's Angus. Angus is AC/DC.
Yeah.
In the eyes of so many people.
And I know they're not going to be what they used to be, and I saw them in the 90s, and I liked them, so I'm going to be a complete hypocrite. If they announce a U.S. tour and it's within drivable range for me, I'm going to go.
I'm a hypocrite, too. I'm going, too.
Yeah. I will travel to see AC/DC one more time.
Yeah. How are they different? How is AC/DC and Motley Crue different?
Brian can still somewhat sing. Vince can't. If Vince Neil could still sing pretty well, passably at least, I would probably go see them again, but he can't.
What if they replaced Vince Neil with somebody else? Would you go see it then?
If they replaced him with John Corabi, absolutely.
Yes, that is the correct answer.
That's really the only person I'd be interested in seeing front them, but yeah.
Yeah, pretty wild, man. AC/DC still ruling the world in 2024. Probably the most popular hard rock band on the planet. Them and Metallica. Who else is on that level?
I don't know. Hawkwind?
Not Hawkwind.
Oh, okay.
Sucking up the juice in the wind.
Back in the news, they've announced that due to personal reasons, bassist Frank Bello will not be able to accompany the band on its upcoming South American tour set to kick off April 13th. Filling in on those dates will be a familiar name. Original Anthrax bassist Dan Lilker is going to fill in for Frank Bello on this tour. I think that's pretty fucking cool.
That is really cool. I like that. You know, it's the idea, like, if you can't give them what you promised, you have to do something special, you know? And they could have just got anybody, you know? They could have picked anybody that didn't want to get paid nothing and would gladly join Anthrax to tour.
Yeah.
But they did the right thing, and they went back in their history and said, yeah, you're going to be sad that Frank's not there, but here's something special for you. It's Dan Lilker. And I like that. I think that's cool.
I thought this was interesting. Former guest of the show, Ricky Rocket from Poison, is working on his memoir and says that he is nearing completion on it. I would definitely read this, and I wonder how candid he's going to be about certain things.
They got a pretty cool story. Coming from Pennsylvania, having the balls to go out to L.A., slugging it out on the Sunset Strip, making a name for themselves, becoming one of the biggest bands in the world. And then all the crazy stuff that happens after that, the ups and downs over the years. And then back to, they're pretty well revered again nowadays.
I think we're all looking forward to the Richie Kotzen chapter.
Oh, yeah. I guess he banged my wife and we kicked him out.
Yeah, I've had to get kicked out of a band in 6 months. But no, I would definitely will read this. I would be interested to hear what he says about Bret Michaels and the arrangement with him doing the solo thing and the guy sitting on the sidelines until Brett's ready to do the band thing again. I have to think he's going to actually let it all hang out a little bit on this.
He might as well. It's his book. Somebody was telling me, like, you're Richie Kotzen. You're this young, good-looking guitar player. You are touring with one of the most popular bands in the world. You can have any woman you want. And you're going to take the drummer's wife.
Yeah, not real long-range planning going on there in his head.
Yeah, should be an interesting book for sure. I hope he doesn't hold back. And I hope he's able to tell stories. Because, again, we always talk about, like, these guys write stories, and they go, oh, no, you're going to get sued or you're going to get canceled for saying this person's name. You can't do that.
I do think it's interesting that he's nearing completion on his autobiography and just around the same time that Brett's coming out going, yeah, there's going to be another Poison tour. There really is.
I'm surprised all three of those other guys don't have books nearing completion with all the free time that Brett gives them.
Come on now. You think CeCe DeVille remembers anything from 1989?
No, he reads everybody else's books and says, I did that? Holy shit.
I would love to interview Bobby Dahl because he doesn't really do any interviews with anybody. And I know he gets picked on about his bass playing and all, and he's a passable bass player. But do you remember the Poison Behind the Music that VH1 did?
It's been seems like 100 years since I've seen it, but yeah, definitely.
Bobby Dahl is the most entertaining part of that whole thing because every time they cut to his interview, he's funny as shit.
Yeah.
I would love to interview him because I have a feeling that he would definitely be 100% brutally honest.
Well, shit. We can get Ace Frehley. We can get Bobby Dahl.
Hey, now. Let's keep our expectations a little low here.
All right. Okay.
Ace Frehley's one thing, but Bobby Dahl, that's a whole other can of worms.
I'd love to do it.
I would too.
We could do an Albums Unleashed with him. If you're out there and you know Bobby Dahl, put in the good word for us.
We're going to get the inside scoop on how the bass part for Unskinny Bop was written.
I don't know. He's probably not going to want to come on the show if you talk bad about him.
I'm sabotaging this immediately, aren't I? That's not smart. Yeah,
don't use reverse psychology here.
Maybe I'll piss him off enough where he's like, I'm going to have to come on your show and straighten you out. When you got nothing, baby, you got
we got.
All right, a couple stories left. Lars Ulrich and Chad Smith are going to both make cameos in the sequel to the iconic mockumentary Spinal Tap that is being filmed right now in the New Orleans area, I believe.
Oh, that's cool. You know what that means? The tradition of many, many drummers in the band continues. I wonder how they die.
Oh, yeah, I guess rest in peace, Lars Ulrich and Chad Smith, right?
Yeah. You know they're going to be one of many drummers.
Wow, Lars Ulrich getting killed on camera. That's going to be something.
Yeah.
James Hetfield can't wait to show up and watch this.
It's his dream come true.
I don't know. How do we feel about Spinal Tap 2? Do you think, does this make you nervous that it could be horrible, or do you think it could be amazing?
I'm looking forward to it in the same way that I look forward to the new Bill and Ted movie when that was finally coming out, and I like that. I think I'm going to like this. I'm hoping I do.
I do love the premise behind it where it's like they're contractually obligated to do one final show because it was in the paperwork from their late manager's office. And like, so they're still on the books to have to do one reunion concert.
Oh,
and
shit.
So the whole thing is centered around them having to get back together to do one show. So that could be pretty funny.
Wow. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. I'm interested in seeing it. I'm glad they're at least giving it a shot. Even if it sucks, so be it. At least they tried.
I think it'll be cool. I have faith. The first one is iconic, like it says, the iconic mockumentary. And it's so much fun to watch. Even to this day, if it was on, I would probably watch it. And it's, yeah, it never gets old. It's got a great soundtrack. I wonder if there would be a soundtrack, some new music.
Oh, there would have to be. I'm sure they had to have written and recorded new songs for this.
See? Even more to look forward to. That's cool as hell.
And I love when we had Moose on the show from the original Kiss crew, how he... And, like, I don't know how they found this out, but they must have found out because he's saying that, like, Kiss played an old Air Force base in Alaska on their first tour. And Spinal Tap borrowed from this story because Spinal Tap goes and plays an Air Force hangar. And that was where Fred, I can't remember his last name. He was a comedian back in the day, but he's in the movie and he's dressed up as an Air Force officer. And he was saying something like, my hair is a little long. People are going to think I'm part of the band. I don't know if you remember that. He was talking about, I saw you guys with like two Jacks and a Jill in Kansas City. It was like, wow. It's not even that big of a part of the movie, but they go on stage at this Air Force hangar and they start having radio interference coming through their amps. And Moose said that came from Kiss's story. Cause when they played that Air Force base in Alaska, the same thing happened to them.
Oh, wow.
And that was like 12 years before the movie came out. So somebody in the music industry must have shared that story with the guys from that were doing Spinal Tap.
Yeah, because, I mean, the whole story of Spinal Tap is borrowed from real-life experiences from these bands.
Yeah, I think Led Zeppelin was the inspiration for the Hello Cleveland, where they get lost under the stage trying to find the stage.
Yeah.
And they keep running into the maintenance man. They run into him the second time. He's like, I guess you took a wrong turn.
Oh, man. And then the Sabbath Stonehenge, that's a tribute to them.
Yeah, that was Black Sabbath. They made that mistake. Although it was the opposite in real life. Instead of it going down to 30 inches, they made it like 300 feet or some stuff. And they couldn't even fit it into the arena.
Yeah, way too big. That's awesome.
So the last story, I always like to end on a light note, and this elicited quite a laugh for me. Just the headline alone, Juan Croucier, the quote, other voice of Rat, is going to perform the band's classic songs on a spring-summer 2024 tour.
Huh. So it's called the Juan Croucier, the other voice of Rat?
Yeah, the self-proclaimed other voice of Rat.
So Juan's going to be taking over lead vocals for this?
Yep.
Huh. That might be fun. Interesting.
The funniest part for me was Bobby Blotzer shared the link to this on Facebook, and for some dumb reason, I'm still friends with Bobby Blotzer. That's more of a story. But he shared it and poked fun at it, saying, like, I can't wait for the videos to come in from this. And we all remember Bobby trotted out his version of the Rat experience a couple of years ago. And Jason Green, who does a great YouTube show called Waste Some Time with Jason Green, was Bobby's tour manager for that tour. and a couple of years ago, like had a big falling out with Bobby and went on his YouTube page and exposed him for everything.
Wow.
Including that there was like a part of the end of the show where he wanted to simulate snowfall and he used instant mashed potatoes as the snow.
Yeah.
To save money. And so Bobby was posting about this wand tour on Facebook, and I commented, if he doesn't use instant mashed potatoes for snow, then it's not legit. Just saying. Bobby didn't respond.
People are supposed to know that. It's showbiz.
Yeah. It's not legit unless you use instant mashed potatoes. But it also is the pot meets kettle thing. Because it's like you're gonna make fun of Juan for doing this. You did your bastardized version of Rat 2 years ago.
Yeah. Huh. So there's no other members of Rat involved in this?
Nope.
It's just Juan.
Just Juan and some other guys. I don't even think this article lists who else is in the band. It says playing all the hits. They're going to do Illinois and 3 shows in Texas. That's all that's been announced so far.
Oh, okay. Well, if they come here, I probably go to it.
Oh, I would totally go.
Cause it's a fun night out with good music and it's a concert that doesn't cost you triple digits.
Well, and Juan still does all those nifty dance moves that he did back in the '80s, even though he looks like a soccer mom dad.
Worth price admission alone.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that he still commits to the act is pretty awesome.
That's cool, man. Well, there you have it. All kinds of stuff going on in the world of hard rock and heavy metal. And if you want to learn about it, there's no better place to do that than with us, the Decibel Geek Podcast. Brought to you by Pantheon Podcasts. You know about Pantheon. They decided a long time ago that they wanted to go out and gather all the best podcasts and music and music-related podcasts and put them all in one place, make it easy for you. So if you like us, that's because we're in with the best. And so other podcasts out there that are just as good as us are available to you now. Pantheon's done all the work for you. Put them all in one place. Look them up. Get the app. All that good stuff. They even got a YouTube channel now. Check that out and give that a like and a follow. And yeah, this has been GeekWire, all the news, all the time. And we'll catch you next week.
See ya.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.